Construction work is right around the corner on a massive Foxconn plant in Mount Pleasant that would make LCD panels for your cell phones and other devices. But before a factory emerges on the landscape, there is the permitting process. We're going to talk about where that stands here on the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's start with Chuck Kornbach. He's a WPR reporter based in Milwaukee. Chuck, welcome back to the program.
Thank you and good morning.
Good morning. So what are the signs that you're seeing that Foxconn is going to start emerging here on the landscape, that this campus is going to start going to that next step with construction?
Sure. Well, the campus, formerly known, of course, as Wisconn Valley Science and Technology Park, we just sort of say Foxconn to make it easier, right? There's some initial site work that has started along Braun, B-R-A-U-N, Braun Road in Mount Pleasant, just east of I-94. Some silt fencing has gone up. There's a small parking lot that has been built, and there's some construction equipment on the site. That was all shown off for us, the media, on Thursday afternoon by the Mount Pleasant officials as well as Racine County leaders.
There's also some stormwater erosion control works prepping of the site?
Right. There has to be a little bit more prep work done to control the runoff, make sure that a big rainstorm, once the land is torn open, that the big rainstorm doesn't wash a lot of material into nearby waterways or out onto the roads and so on. So I think that's going to be the next mini step before widespread construction.
So Foxconn gained significant permissions last week with the DNR granting diverting water from Lake Michigan, and but there was also this first round of permits in terms of air. What do we know there?
Well, yeah, last week in rather rapid fashion, it seemed about one per day, it came the permits for the construction site stormwater controls. In other words, that construction, as preliminary work on construction could begin. Then the air permits came, four of them, for various things. Then next came the Lake Michigan diversion proposal that got approved, and then also the DNR approved sort of the beginnings of some wetlands efforts down there. There's about 17 acres of wetlands on this massive site. Somewhere the Foxconn or others are going to have to create about 34, but the initial step got approved by the DNR on the wetlands issue.
Starting with air, though, is there concern for officials or residents in Racine County about air pollution?
Well, this site is out in a mainly, right now, agricultural area. We're not far from the city of Racine and not far from some big warehouses along Highway 11 in southern Racine County and so on. But it will produce some emissions. They've got they're going to be forming silica into glass down there using some chemicals. There's a concrete plant to be built, a nitrogen plant and so on. And then the other key issue, perhaps, though, is ozone.
There was also a lot of talk last week about these 7 million gallons a day from Lake Michigan. How does the plant use this water, and does it go back into the Great Lakes?
Well, they're going to be using it, I guess, in the production process. I'm assuming cooling is a big part of it. Once the water is used, some of it will disappear in the production process, but once it's the rest of it's used, there'll be some treatment supposedly at the Foxconn plant, and then it'll be piped back to the Racine wastewater treatment plant.
I also saw this figure that 2.7 million gallons a day lost through evaporation.
Right. That's the compact, the Great Lakes Water Diversion Compact, built in some of that, and I think the Foxconn proposal meets the amount of evaporation that would occur that is allowed. It does seem like a lot, though.
Talking with Chuck Kornbach, he is WPR reporter based in Milwaukee. We're talking about the recent permits granted through the DNR for Foxconn Technology Group. Chuck, objections are everywhere, it seems, despite permission to pull water from Lake Michigan. Let's hear from Cheryl Nen with the Compact Implementation Coalition and Milwaukee Riverkeeper. That's a group that works to protect, improve, and advocate for local waters. Let's hear from Cheryl.
You know, we're very concerned about the precedent that this might set, where any city that's sitting within, you know, along the Great Lakes, which could be Milwaukee or Sheboygan or Detroit, you know, that has excess water capacity, that they would be able to, you know, in the future, just send water outside of the Great Lakes Basin to any private company that decided to pick up a parcel of land outside of the Great Lakes Basin line.
So you've been talking with Cheryl and others about this. Is there a great concern that this water can go elsewhere?
Well, the bottom line of this proposal is that the environmentalists argue that the diversion plan violates the Great Lakes Compact because the water diversion from Racine, the city of Racine, which is, of course, on the lake, to Mount Pleasant inland, would be primarily for private purposes, the environmentalists say. The DNR has disagreed in granting the permit or granting authority. So the environmentalists are now waiting to see if the regional body, the group of Great Lakes governors and their representatives, Great Lakes governors and Canadian province leaders, will take a look at this to review what the DNR has proposed.
So are there lawsuits waiting in the balance here if this seems to go through as is?
Well, it's a possibility. Right now, I think what I'm being told is that advocates from around the Great Lakes are contacting their regional body representative to push for the review by the panel. This is the panel that looked extensively at the Waukesha water diversion before eventually approving it. The regional body did not have to look at the Mount Pleasant diversion due to the language of the Great Lakes Compact, but again, the environmentalists would like the regional body to do so. Yes, there's a potential of a lawsuit as well, but first I think we're going to find out if there's going to be any regional review.
You also spoke with one of the landowners holding out, not willingly selling to Foxconn, and let's hear a bit from Kim Mahoney.
We are entitled, even under the eminent domain procedures, to comparable replacement property. They don't have that figured into their formula. They've set the formula of fair market value times 1.4 for all the homeowners, regardless of the situation.
So help us understand a bit more there. Kim Mahoney and her husband live on a lot in the southeast corner of the Foxconn project. What should we know about their situation?
Well, the big picture is that Mount Pleasant has been buying up land for Foxconn. The community says 80% of what Foxconn needs for the total complex has been acquired, 95% for phase one. But Kim Mahoney and her husband live in this small section at the southeast corner of the Foxconn property. And she's saying that, listen, you're offering me far short of what I need, $200,000 short of what I need to find comparable housing nearby. She's made a proposal and has been rejected, and she doesn't like what the village is offering.
There's also this word blighted, this designation of blighted. How does that play into this?
Well, it's a condemnation procedure under Wisconsin law. The Mount Pleasant is saying the whole 2,800 acres the complex would need qualifies for blighted status and would give the village more powers to take over the property. They say they're not saying anyone's home is blighted. There's some nice homes out there that I've seen, but it's legislation or a legal term under the Wisconsin law they're using, Mount Pleasant is using, because some roads are closing, road construction is underway, and so the area is blighted, that the village says.
So where does this put Foxconn in its process? What permits does the company still need?
Well, they need several yet. I think I'll try and take them in order yet. I mean, that's assuming they get this property issue settled. But the Public Service Commission is looking at the proposed electrical substation Foxconn wants, and also to be able to connect to transmission lines in the area. The plant will need eventually from the DNR an industrial stormwater permit. And I should also mention that the Public Service Commission has done a draft EIS and is going to hold a hearing in June. So there's a couple things Foxconn needs, and as well as settling this property issue, which Mount Pleasant hopes to do by August 1st. But there's also a lawsuit involved over eminent domain. Several landowners are pushing back against having their property altered or taken.
So there are still some steps to get through here. Chuck, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you.
Chuck Hornbach is Wisconsin Public Radio's reporter in Milwaukee. He joined us to offer the latest on Wisconsin DNR approval of a request to divert 7 million gallons of water from Lake Michigan. Next, we'll be turning to a freshwater science analyst after the news to consider the environmental effects of this proposal and how it's viewed through the lens of the Great Lakes Compact. You can join in, 800-642-1234. Do you think governments should regulate Foxconn? Do you agree with granting air permits? Are you in favor of pulling water from the plant from Lake Michigan? Or are these concerns overblown? Is there something you think that we're not taking into account, not paying attention to in this Foxconn situation? Call in, tweet us, WPR Mornings. We'll get back to the conversation after a news update here on the Ideas Network. The state DNR approved a request last Wednesday to pull millions of gallons of water daily from Lake Michigan to serve Foxconn Technology Group. It's a step that will help the Taiwanese electronics maker clear a major regulatory hurdle. And Foxconn expects to begin moving dirt on its new factory in just a few weeks. We'll talk about the water for this manufacturing plant here on this State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Javel Klump is Dean of the School of Freshwater Sciences at UW-Milwaukee. He's a limnologist, and fun fact to know and tell, he was the first person to reach the deepest spot in Lake Superior back in the 1980s. Javel Klump, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Well, help us understand here, why are critics so concerned about diverting 7 million gallons a day from Lake Michigan?
Well, I think there are two issues. One is the amount of water being diverted, which is 7 million gallons a day. And in fact, that's probably not a major concern. I mean, given the size of the Great Lakes, the size of this diversion, and the fact that they have to return this water, most of it anyway, it would have an undetectable impact on the quantity of water in Lake Michigan. I think the bigger concern with respect to water is the return flow and the quality of the return flow. Obviously, the water that they return has got some things in it that weren't in it to begin with, and the question is, what are those constituents, those potential contaminants, and are they of concern? And we don't know right now. I mean, and honestly, this is an issue that faces everybody who draws water out of the lakes and returns it, regardless of whether you're inside or outside the basin. And if you're using Lake Michigan water and returning it, this is an issue for us all.
So we don't know how much effort and precision will go into cleaning up that water on its reentry into the Great Lakes?
No, we don't. As far as I know, we don't yet know. Now, Foxconn is required to pretreat their industrial discharge. We don't have any details on that yet, as far as I know. And, of course, there are things that are in that water that are probably not regulated. And so what are those things? Admittedly, they may be in very small concentrations, although we do know there are things that are entering the water today that are not regulated, that are in very small concentrations that, you know, do build up over time and are having impacts. So, I think that's a legitimate concern.
And we're talking about chemicals here?
Yes. So it'd be things like chemicals or nanomaterials or microplastics, or it could be a whole host of things, but largely chemicals, yes.
When you say nanoplastics, do you mean actual particles in the water that are plastic?
Well, and maybe not so much plastics, but nanomaterials that are other, you know, very small particles that are made of certain kinds of oxides and other things that are sort of ubiquitous in the environment. And we know those are getting into the system.
Well, where is the Great Lakes Compact in all of this? Because that compact says utilities should use the water largely for residential customers. So what does that mean?
And I think that's probably the biggest hurdle they have. The Great Lakes Compact says you can approve a diversion, approve an exception to the prohibition on a diversion for public use. And, of course, this request is for one customer, essentially, one sole user, and that's an industrial discharger. In their response to this comment, the DNR actually put in a table which indicated that less than 10% of the connections to the system are industrial or commercial, but that's sort of counting one household the same as one industrial connection. It's not about that. The table didn't take into account volume. Now I think it's probably about evenly split for the Racine Water Utility. About half of the water on a volume basis goes for residential public use, and about half for industrial and commercial. The Foxconn diversion would change that to about two-thirds industrial.
So nudging it up quite a bit to industrial. Yeah. Does this undermine the spirit of the Great Lakes Compact Agreement, or is that way to interpret this proper use of public water?
Well, I mean, one thing I think is kind of informative is to look at the Waukesha diversion request, which was approved eventually. But the parties to the compact, in other words, the eight Great Lakes states, basically insisted that the Waukesha diversion be limited to Waukesha. And the original application was actually to extend the service area, and they said no. The real meaning behind the compact prohibition, or the exception to the prohibition for having a diversion, is to relieve a hardship, and it was considered that Waukesha had that hardship, but the hardship didn't extend to expanding the use of the water beyond what they already served. And I think there's an argument that sort of falls along those lines here with respect to the diversion here for Foxconn. You know, sort of ironically, or if this site were to be shifted a couple of miles and fall totally within the basin, then there would be the Great Lakes Compact wouldn't even be invoked.
We're talking right now with Val Klump, Dean of the School of Freshwater Sciences at UW-Milwaukee, talking about the environmental impact as the city of Racine intends to divert 7 million gallons of water from Lake Michigan each day for the Foxconn plant. You can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. How do you balance economic and environmental concerns? Is one more important than the other? Do you think it's possible to strike a balance at the end of the day? And if you live in Racine, what are people saying in your community about this? Call in 800-642-1234. You can email ideas@wpr.org. Val, it's been said that 2.7 million gallons of this 7 million gallons of water a day would be lost to evaporation. Is that about right? That's like a 39% of daily intake lost to evaporation. What's going on there?
Well, and that's, I think, largely, I think, in the cooling process. They use water for cooling, so to cool it, you evaporate the water. Under the Great Lakes Compact, they actually addressed the issue of consumptive. It's known as consumptive use. In other words, you use the water and it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you could argue if it goes into the atmosphere, there is some chance it rains back out, back into the basin. But in any case, it is considered a consumptive use. The Great Lakes Compact puts a limit on consumptive use if it exceeds 5 million gallons a day. That invokes the entire Great Lakes Compact regional authority to look at. There are two exceptions under the compact for the prohibition on a diversion. One is communities which are in a straddling county. That's the Waukesha case, which requires approval of all Great Lakes state governors. And the other exception is communities that are known as straddling communities. No, the community itself straddles the Great Lakes boundary. And that's the case for New Berlin, for example,
mm-hmm.
which receives water from the Great Lakes Basin, even though it's outside. And it also includes the Foxconn case. not only requires the approval of the state authority, in this case the DNR. Now, there is a regional body that can review this, and I think there is some pressure on by some, you know, to get the regional body to review it. There have been comments by other states. Basically, the regional authority isn't automatically invoked unless the consumptive use is over 5 million gallons a day, and that doesn't appear to be the case here.
Well, Jason in Beloit emailed and said, what is the solution? Businesses like Foxconn need resources and Wisconsinites need jobs. Isn't there a way to do this right so it's a win-win? This seems like a perennial problem. Val, how would you respond to Jason?
Yeah, well, one of the issues, I think, is that we treat water as a free good. If you read what Racine has said, they're going to sell water. But in fact, that's not true. They don't, or if they're selling, they're not really selling water. What they're doing is selling a service. They sell the withdrawal, the distribution, the treatment of the water as they return it to the basin. But the water they draw out of the system, they take for absolutely free. We don't pay a thin dime for it. In my view, is that's a mistake. Now, the value of the water to Foxconn or to you or to me or to a brewery or to whoever uses it, we could probably assign. It might not be that easy in some cases. We could certainly assign a value to that. But the value of the water at the other end of that pipe, the end of the pipe that's in Lake Michigan, is a lot more difficult to determine. But I can guarantee you it's not zero. It's not zero, and the problem is today is we don't pay for that. We treat Lake Michigan water is absolutely free, and I think that's a mistake. And so we're not adequately, in my view, compensating our system for the use of this water.
Let's go to Janet now, joining us from Random Lake. Hi, Janet.
Hi.
Go ahead.
My question is two things. I noticed that Bell had said that he gave the analogy of the Great Lakes Alliance, you know, addressing the Waukesha area. And I think one of the problems with them expanding the service of the water, Great Lakes Michigan water, to the Waukesha area was because of the watershed issue. And that won't be an issue for Foxconn. However, I do know that a lot of times, like he had alluded to also, there will be a lot of things in the affluent coming out of Foxconn, and the EPA and all their regulatory areas do not regulate the chemicals that are in the water. Does he ever see a situation where perhaps more of the chemicals that are coming out of these affluents, especially because they possibly could impact Racine so greatly, being treated? And that was my question.
Janet, great question, and hold on here, Val, because Mike in Castle Rock is going to piggyback. We think, Mike, go ahead.
Yes, I'd like to know what the history of this state has in protecting water quality, generally, around the state.
Mike, thank you, wanting to look historically. And so, Val, Janet first on regulations and possible tightening that up.
Yeah, I think Janet has put her finger on the central question here that people are concerned about, because we don't know what's in this sort of cocktail of material that's coming out of this plant. I assume Foxconn does and could tell us. The technology to clean it up exists. So they could clean it up to, you know, pristine standards before they return it to the system. And the question is whether they'll be required to do so or not. But a lot of the constituents are not, as Janet points out, are not regulated. So that if to meet conventional sewage effluent discharges doesn't necessarily completely protect us in that case. And you got to remember that, you know, the water residence time in Lake Michigan is essentially 100 years, so it doesn't wash out very fast. And we know this for a fact because we can see constituents that are exotic, things like pharmaceuticals, that are coming into the lake that are actually building up over time. And we can't find a place where we don't see them, as a matter of fact. So that, I think, is of all the water issues with respect to quantity and quality, that's the key one, I think. With respect to the states, Mike's question with respect to the history of Wisconsin in terms of of regulating water quality. I think in general the state has got a pretty good record. Whether we'll maintain that record, I think, is in the minds of some still up to debate.
Let's go to Jeremy now in Racine. Jeremy, hi, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. 7 million gallons barely even scratches the surface, but my concern is if we start opening up to these industries here in Wisconsin, what's to stop Michigan across the pond doing the same thing, Illinois, Indiana? What's to stop these other governors coming back and saying, well, we allowed Racine to do it, why can't we do it? And it could be a pretty slippery slope on private companies pulling large quantities of water and polluting it and trying to discharge it back into the lake.
Jeremy, seeing a domino effect here, Val, could this happen?
Yeah, and I think that's why people are concerned about the precedential value of this. 7 million gallons a day is you know, in some respects, a drop in the bucket. On the other hand, I'm sure there are communities in northern Ohio, Indiana, et cetera, which are in similar situations in which local industries or just outside the basin but within a straddling community could also apply for it. And so I think that's the concern, and the concern is this is a diversion solely for a private entity, for an industry. So I think that, you know, that's why people, I think, are pushing back on this, to make sure that whatever precedent is set is one we can live with on down the road.
Foxconn issued a statement that says the company believes that protecting the environment is a fundamental responsibility for them as a sustainable business and as a global industry leader. Can we and should we take them at their word?
I don't know the answer to that question. It doesn't surprise me they say that. If I were in their shoes, I would say exactly the same thing.
Who is the burden on to make sure Foxconn takes care of the water it returns to the lake? Is it the company? Is it the state? Is it federal regulators? Who is in this to make sure that this happens?
I think it's the burden on the state and federal regulators. So it's the Wisconsin DNR, US EPA, and to a lesser degree the city of Racine. So it's really up to our regulatory agencies to assure that the water quality being returned to the lake is protective of the system.
So, Val, as this proceeds, what are you watching here as next steps play out?
Well, I think two things. One is the whole water quality issue, and it's, you know, because we do have the technology, Kate, to clean this water up. It's not a matter of, if it's possible, it's definitely possible. So we can clean the water sufficiently to be protective of the system. The other is the issue with respect to the public use of it and whether a diversion, which is essentially solely for one entity, can be considered a public use. The way the DNR and Racine, I think, have framed the issue is that, well, in the grand totality of our service area, we are largely a public water use utility, even though we add one single, other connection, which is for an industry. That strikes me as a little bit, specious. But nevertheless, and I think that's what's going to be most closely scrutinized, not only within Wisconsin, but across the basin.
And we'll have to leave it right there. Jay Val Klump, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Val Klump is dean of the School of Freshwater Sciences at UW-Milwaukee, joining us for this conversation about the environmental impact of the water diversion from Lake Michigan. You can join in 800-642-1234, back after the news. If Foxconn commitments hold true, this deal is destined to eclipse any job creation records from the past. This flat-screen manufacturing campus in Mount Pleasant would be bigger than a lot of factories in China. Milwaukee Journal Sentinel pointed out it would be 3 times the size of the Pentagon, the world's largest office. We're talking about the economic footprint here on the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A Foxconn executive said groundbreaking for the factory in Racine County will take place soon, and that 90% of the construction companies that have won work for the plant's first phase of building are from Wisconsin. Here's Lewis Wu.
Do not tell the folks at Racine County, because only 10% of the company are from that county. That means it's that the rest of the 90% of the companies are all over the state of Wisconsin.
Let's bring in Lucas Weber. He's general counsel for Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce. He's also WMC's director of environmental and energy policy. Lucas, welcome to the program.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me.
So Foxconn has announced contractors, as we just heard, from all over the state. So we now know more about the businesses contributing to building this plant. What do we know about the breakdown of these companies?
Well, I think it was announced last week that 90% of them are Wisconsin-based companies, I think 10% in the Racine area. So that just shows there's going to be a vast majority of them are spread throughout the state of Wisconsin, which is certainly good news for every corner of our state.
The company is about to or has received air permits and permission to use millions of gallons of water from Lake Michigan every day. So what do you make of the permitting process so far as you see it?
Yeah, so the permitting process has been 100% by the book, and it's been very transparent. I think we need to give a lot of credit to our State Department of Natural Resources. You know, they put on two very large hearings, informational hearings, public hearings, where people could participate in the process. Foxconn, and I should be clear, the water permit, the permit that was applied for by the city of Racine, not by Foxconn. So the city of Racine is going to be supplying that water to Mount Pleasant and ultimately to Foxconn. But the permitting process has been the same as it would be for any other industrial facility in the state to get these air permits. The water, the air permits are going to be the same exact that they would get for any other facility in the state of Wisconsin. And it was done, you know, on the same timeline they would have done that for any other facility.
So how do you balance the needs of manufacturing with all these concerns we're hearing for preserving natural resources, preserving the Great Lakes?
Yeah, so we've here in Wisconsin, we have very robust environmental permitting laws, and we should. I mean, it's obviously our environment is here to serve all of us. When we're talking about Foxconn, this is the largest greenfield investment by a foreign-based company in U.S. history. It's the largest economic development project in Wisconsin history. We're talking, you know, millions and millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars in state tax revenue that's going to be coming in from these jobs that are created. And importantly, as they do that, they're going to have to abide by every single environmental standard that we have. No air quality standard or water quality standard were exempted or changed in any way for Foxconn. So they're going to have to meet all of these rigorous health-based standards that protect our air and water. They'll have to do that now and into the future. Those aren't going to go away, and they shouldn't.
So Foxconn is starting here from scratch, and there are a couple phases of ramping up employment. Can you talk about how the jobs process will pan out, how that will work?
Yeah, so our understanding of it is the construction of the facility, and we're talking about a 20 million square foot campus. So it's about the equivalent of seven Empire State Buildings or five Malls of America, I guess, to kind of put it into some perspective. But that would employ about 10,000 workers over a four-year period. As a result of those 10,000 jobs, it's expected to induce about 6,000 ancillary jobs, and that's just the initial phase. Once the project is up and running, they will then hire, I believe, 13,000 employees at the Foxconn project, making an average of $73,500 a year with pay plus benefits, which is expected to induce 22,000 indirect jobs on the side. So that's certainly very large numbers, and as I mentioned, is the largest economic development project in state history. The state tax credits that are provided for that are really threefold. The first is a sales tax exemption on construction materials. So when they're building the project, they won't need to pay sales tax on the materials they're purchasing. The second is a credit on capital expenditures that they make within the zone. So they can credit back any capital expenditures. And the third is the payroll credit, which is a tax credit for, I believe, 17% of the payroll that they are using for the project. But again, that is capped, as is the capital expenditures credit. Those are both capped after over time. So those three credits are in place. Importantly, none of those credits go out without actual results from Foxconn first. So we, you know, it's really kind of a pay-as-we-go plan, pay-as-we-grow plan is how it's been described, and I think that's an accurate description.
Well, Jimmy in Valley Junction called in to ask, are there any requirements that the Foxconn jobs will go to Wisconsin residents, or could they go to people living in northern Illinois just as easily?
Yeah, I mean, I think certainly there will be some folks from northern Illinois who come to work at the plant. I think Foxconn has made it very clear from the beginning that their goal is to hire as many Wisconsinites as they possibly can. There aren't a lot of unemployed Wisconsinites right now for you know, that's it's sort of a double-edged sword, but we would certainly hope that they would employ as many Wisconsinites as they could. Certainly, if somebody from Illinois is working at Foxconn, they're still going to be paying our state income taxes, and so we would still collect all of that revenue.
Do you anticipate we'll see commuters coming from other states working the week at Foxconn, going back home?
Possibly. I mean, these are very well-paying, family-supporting jobs. I mean, I think it's certainly possible. I'd hate to speculate, but I do know that Foxconn has repeatedly shown a strong commitment to the state of Wisconsin and a strong desire to hire Wisconsinites. So,
let's go to Todd now in Janesville with a question. Hi, Todd. Go ahead.
Good morning. Yeah, I was just curious how we can forecast the economic impressions these jobs will make when we don't even know what the hourly wages are going to be paid.
Well, there's been this wage thrown out that you just mentioned, Lucas. Is that an umbrella type wage? Will we know more specifics as to the breakdown of wages?
Yeah, so that's the average wage paid. Foxconn is not able to receive any credits on any jobs that pay less than $30,000 per year. So they can't even begin receiving anything from the state unless they're reaching that threshold. And then the credit they get is tied directly to the salary that they're paying out, up to, I believe, the credit can be earned on his incomes up to $100,000 a year. So,
and are these salary jobs or are these hourly wage jobs?
I believe it'll be a mix of both. I think there'll be both hourly and salary jobs, but I'm not 100% familiar with all of the jobs that they're going to be creating.
Do we know whether these jobs would ebb and flow? Would people have many layoffs if the work isn't coming into Foxconn? If perhaps that they don't get the contract that they had wanted for building X number of LCD screens?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly can't speak to the business processes of Foxconn and what they've got planned. I think it'd be just like any other industrial facility in the state that, they would produce products and sell them to their customers. And as long as their customers are buying it, they'd be able to continue to employ those folks.
Let's go to Joe now, joining us from Viroqua. Hi, Joe.
Good morning. To start out with, I'd like to mention the city of Waukesha had withdrawal of water for human health purposes. Foxconn is a Chinese company after monetary wealth. The highest degree of monitoring of this water returning to Lake Michigan should be at hand. The DNR is shorthanded with employees the way it is now. So this monitoring of the return water from Foxconn better be of the highest degree. If the Wisconsin citizens got to vote on this issue, it would be dead on arrival. Scott Walker's signature is on this project.
And Joe, I'm going to stop you right there because I want to ask you, Lucas, this company is going to, in some sense, perhaps have to police itself as to what it turns back into Lake Michigan. Whose responsibility is it to make sure that it's doing all that it can for the environment and for the community, being good citizens?
Yeah, so Foxconn, first of all, a lot of the water that gets returned will be returned through the Racine Wastewater Utility. So to say Foxconn will be policing themselves is an understatement at best, but they will have to treat it certainly probably before it even gets to the Racine Wastewater Utility, who then treats that effluent like they treat all effluent before it gets returned to the lake, and it must meet all water quality standards if Foxconn does apply for a WPDES permit, a discharge permit to discharge themselves directly. Then that permit would come with all of the standards, all of the state standards in it to, you know, they have to disclose what exactly they're discharging and how much levels, and they'd have to show that they're going to meet all of those standards going forward. They would be subject to the exact same reporting requirements and enforcement requirements as every other industrial discharger in the state of Wisconsin.
So, Lucas, as we wrap up here, what does Foxconn mean to Wisconsin's economy?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's as I said earlier, the largest economic development project in state history. This is a generational game changer. We've seen with the suppliers that they're going to be spreading this the growth and development throughout the state of Wisconsin. I mean, every corner of the state will benefit from this. We have existing industrial manufacturers here in the state who have large supply chains, and they are benefiting every community around the state, and Foxconn will take that to, a factor of 10. It's going to be incredible what they do for our state, and we're excited to have them here.
Well, Lucas, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Have a great day.
You too. Lucas Weber is General Counsel for Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce. He's also WMC's Director of Environmental and Energy Policy. Earlier in the hour, we talked with WPR reporter in Milwaukee, Chuck Kornbach. We also spoke with J. Val Klump of UW-Milwaukee School of Freshwater Sciences. We're discussing the approved water diversion permits from Lake Michigan for the Foxconn manufacturing plant. This edition of the State Capitol Report was produced by Keely Boltina, Brianne Shasso, and Ideas Network Director Cheryl Gasser. Michael Derringer provided technical direction. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. And the conversation doesn't stop here. Join us on Facebook, where the Ideas Network, and share your thoughts about Foxconn, water diversion, economic impact by posting on the page. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're with us here on the Ideas Network.